weekly live stream recording of the M&A Zing, a podcast series devoted to acquisition entrepreneurs, search funds and holdco builders in the UK and EU, discussing the topics and challenges that impact SMB succession M&A and exploring the highs and lows of searching, acquiring, owning and operating small and medium-sized businesses. Today, I am your host, Alfie Lambert, co-founder of BizCrunch and our resident outreach expert, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-founder, our CEO, serial acquirer, and all-round good egg, Gareth Hawkins.
Definitely egghead, yeah. thanks for that, Alf. Yes, as you say, as ever, I am a permanent fixture that never goes away. But it's great to have somebody else in the driving seat this week. I can take it a bit easier.
Last week's episode was great, though. It was really great. I enjoyed the interview format. Before we kick off with this week's topic, what's the news, Gareth?
Well, the news, yeah. It's been quite an interesting pan-European news roundup this week, I would say. There's growing activities, a couple of deals that have got done. There's a couple of new expos and conferences. So, yeah, let's start with deals over the line. I guess probably the most notable of which is Fitex Capital of Italy, led by Daniele Civiello and Giulio Marini. They have acquired an industrial laundry company and hotel supplies outfit called Napolilio Industries. And really interesting deal for those guys. Not hugely plugged into the Italian scene myself, but lovely to see that it's growing in activity for ETA in Italy.
Yeah, that's interesting. We don't generally tend to hear a lot from Italy, but as we know, and as we spoke about on our episode, that it's, ETA is growing in Europe. And hotel supplies, laundry is really interesting. I spoke to one of our users about this a couple of weeks ago, and he said that he'd been looking into it. It's really, it's probably not the first thing that that would come to mind when thinking about buying a company, you know, but I think it's such a smart buy, such an interesting industry. And one that's going to persist. They're always going to need more. They're always going to need more clean sheets.
Well, this is true. We all need a clean sheet, don't we? but yeah, no, it is one of those evergreen industries that is going to have constant demand. Doesn't look like AI is going to disrupt it anytime soon.
No.
I think Daniele specifically, who's obviously qualified from Boston College in the US, has got some experience actually with, you know, Brightstar and Bain. Out of the US, he's obviously taken a fairly long-sighted view of the sort of industries he wants to acquire in. And hospitality, just if you look at the CAGR of hospitality in generally, it's growing. But having an aligned service industry like industrial laundry can only be a good thing. So yeah, I wish him absolute success, and no doubt it will continue. Maybe he'll come on and tell us all about it at some point. Further north in the continent, actually out of Berlin, there's a conference, the Mittelstand Summit 2025, that's been announced, taking place on the 20th of May, which will be a nice sort of hub for the German ETA space, which again continues to grow in activity. It's invite only, so I think Google we'll put a link in the show notes, and folks can see who they can tap up to get an invite. But certainly great to see that forum evolving. It seems to be quite a calendar this year of ETA events across Europe.
I was about to say, it seems like every week we're announcing a new one. That would be really cool. I love Berlin. It's a great city, and it's an absolute prime market for succession acquisition. So that'd be a really cool event.
Yeah, it most certainly will. In fact, yeah, hot on the heels, I guess, of an event that's taking place later this month, actually, in Stockholm, a couple of weeks' time, 17th to 18th. Mm. There's the Serial Acquirers event by Redeye, the Nordic growth hub. They tend to put on a pretty good event, and this one is a two-day one, attracting folks from all over the scene. So yeah, I think that's worth checking out. Looks like that might actually be sold out already, but yeah, you could spend quite a lot of your year traveling around Europe attending these ETA events. I'm sure there's folks out there that do.
Wouldn't that be lovely? Maybe that'll be us next year. We can live podcast from all of them.
Well, look, if we can get AI doing everything at BizCrunch, we'll be living the Adam Smith dream of huge automation and putting our feet up. Humanity's savior, not.
But, you know, all jokes aside, it is really great for ETA in Europe that we have so many events. You know, it does show that there is a growing appetite for it, and it's only going to inspire more acquirers, you know, more search funds to pop up as they start to see this momentum growing. So I'm super excited for what this means for ETA in the EU.
Well, success breeds success, right? And if we can have more forums in which people can see, you know, examples of people like them that have gone on to great things and, you know, managed to acquire and managed to potentially even exit their acquired businesses. Mm-hmm. That's why these podcasts are so great, particularly the interview-oriented ones like Acquiring Minds, etc., because you get to hear it from the horse's mouth, right? That, success is possible. And I think that only creates more people that want to go off and achieve the same thing. So yeah, it's a great catalyst for ETA in general.
Agreed.
But having said that, the flip side of the coin is that there's a growing amount of noise in the news at the moment. I've seen it in search funds news, and there was a great podcast, In the Trenches, I think it's called, by Kent Weaver, that is talking about the declining acquisition success rate in search in the USA. Historically, yeah. You used to get, you know, 2/3 of searchers would get a deal over the line, and that's been impaired slightly over the last decade, falling to about 57% now. And I guess the question that everybody's trying to grapple with is why? Is it oversupply of searchers? Is it an underavailability of businesses? We know that not to be true. Is it a change of cost of capital? Is it increase in multiples? Is it, you know, it's internal succession? Like, who knows? But they postulate these different possibilities in these articles and podcasts. So well worth diving into at some point in the future, I guess, as to, you know, what are the drivers of success in search? Like what leads more people? What conditions need to be right for people to get searches over the line versus what are the inhibiting factors that hold back that part of the economy or that asset class? Mm-hmm. Answers on a postcard. Yeah. What do you think, Alf?
It's really difficult to know. It's not a huge dip. I mean, look, any dip is obviously a negative thing. It's not a huge dip. I would like to see how that trends over the next couple of years.
Sure.
But yeah, it's definitely not a lack of businesses, as we know. Maybe a proliferation of new searchers. I don't think that we are at saturation for that yet, that we'd see a dip. US wide, I don't think we're quite at that level. So
there's not enough data, is it? I mean, the big tell is, you know, how many deals rather than a percentage, which, you know, lies and statistics, right? The percentage can be impacted by, as you say, number of new searchers on the scene. If we just knew, you know, what the trajectory of deals was like in general in search, I think we'd have a better picture.
Yeah, I think that's what I was about to say, is I think that, you know, if the number of deals has risen, but the success rate has fallen, I don't think that's the end of the world. You know, if there are, you know, more search funds, more searches out there, more deals getting over the line, but as a result of that, you know, there's a slight dip in conversion, then I don't think that's the end of the world. Yeah, I'd be really interested to find that, actually.
We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. There's a a report that, obviously, we'll wait for the next Stanford report, because that looks into activity in a very granular and forensic way on search funds. So we'll wait that with bated breath. But we did talk about the 2024 report of 80 acquisitions globally that were search fund led. That came up in a show 2 weeks ago, I think, when we last spoke it through. So if 80 is the number in 2024, is that significantly higher or lower, and is it proportionate to the number of searchers in those periods? That's the data we need to get. So I think we'll leave that topic there, but it's one to postulate on, and who knows, maybe BizCrunch could be doing our own state of ETA report at some point in the coming years.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. So should we get into the main thrust of today?
Yes, I was going to say that with this conversation about you know, success in SMB M&A, it's a nice segue into our topic. So this is something that struck me this week. I work with some of our users on their initial outreach. So I help them, you know, with crafting their emails and sending their letters and building their campaigns and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, success for me is when they get to their first call, when they first speak to a potential seller. And at that point, I kind of hand them off and, you know, maybe they'll have some time with you. But I got to thinking, you know, what makes a good first call? You know, what is a good qualifying call? What should people be looking for? And the man to ask on that is you, someone that's done this before.
I've done a few.
So, yes, that's today's topic, qualifying calls with sellers.
Great topic.
So let's start with the basics. What is a qualifying call? You know, why does this initial conversation matter so much for buyers and sellers?
Well, it matters because up until that point, typically, the conversations have been had purely by email and or LinkedIn or some kind of textual medium rather than the human conversation, right? The human interaction. And that's a massive icebreaker and a hugely necessary part of the process. You can't robotize the entire thing. People have got to go into the process very early once, you know, interest is expressed by both sides. So it's that humanizing moment, really, where there's a mutual introduction for the seller and the potential buyer. They get to know each other. It is normally punctuated by some fairly obvious awkwardness, I guess. You've got to embrace the cringe.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, you know, get through it. That there's uncertainty. There's trying to think around, you know, uncover the true motivations of each side. So, you know, there's going to be a bit of posturing and positioning. It's just natural. But if you approach it as a human and you hope that that's reciprocated, you know, you can't go much wrong. But it's an opportunity, I guess, for the humanity to shine through. And once you've walked up and that awkwardness has kind of abated, then you can start getting into kind of mutual discovery and working out what each other's ambitions are. And that's what, you know, that's the nub, right? Ambition. Mm.
I suppose how awkward that is depends maybe on the buyer's background, you know, whether they come from if they've done a lot of sales before or been involved in this kind of thing. If they are, you know, complete first timers and this isn't in their wheelhouse, then I can see it being slightly daunting. But, you know, that's what this episode's here for. Hopefully they can go away with a bit more confidence.
You can't tar every seller with the same brush or expect them all to behave the same. I mean, there are a variety of different psychologies. So maybe we'll get into that as we talk a bit further about the different types of seller you might encounter, because you probably, despite all your desk research, you probably don't know the psychology and the wiring of a seller until you really start, you know, looking at them face to face or talking to them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why getting on these calls as soon as possible is important, I guess. Okay, so I'm a buyer. I'm having that first call. What should I be looking for? What are the sort of key details that I should prioritize to uncover on this first call?
Yeah, I mean, details are going to be fairly light because it's the dance of the seven veils, you know. I don't know if that's too woke to say that these days, but, you know, you're the whole process of this, you know, discovery of each other is gradual and slow. And so no one really gives you, you know, unfettered access on the first call. So detail is not to be rushed. What you really want to understand is sentiment at this stage. You know, the very fact that you're on a call means that, you know, you've got this fleeting, apocryphal kind of mutual interest in having at least a conversation to see what the other one's about. But how deep does that go? How ready is the seller? Because have you reached them as a proprietary deal flow kind of exercise? Have you reached them completely unexpectedly and they've never given this any thought, but you've piqued their curiosity? Or have they actually sat there with, look, here's my IM and here's my data room link and I'm ready to go, and I've delegated and off, you know, I've had my days, I'm in the wind. You don't know. You should treat everybody with an open mind going in, and really you're asking some kind of probing questions. I always like to open with, you know, tell me how, you know, the journey to here. What's it been like? What got you started in the business?
And that's a great, yeah.
How have you seen your industry evolve over the last sort of, couple of decades of your tenure or few years of your tenure? Because, you know, sellers are often proud of what they built. They rightly should be.
Yeah.
And can be relied upon often to give you the sort of potted history. And that's a good warm-up method, a good icebreaker, you know, is tell me about your journey. I'd love to know how you built what you've got today.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely first question. Sort of searching, friendly. Like you said, lots of sellers are going to be proud. They want to tell you their story. And you can uncover quite a lot, probably not just about the business, but about the seller. Like you said, we want to kind of understand what makes them tick, how they're wired, you know, what are the buttons to press. And I think that in asking that and getting them to explain how they got where they were, you probably start to chip away at that a little bit.
Yeah, and as you can tell from the way that they, the bits that they emphasize, the different emphasis through the narrative, you can tell whether, you know, what their motivations are, how they've changed, whether they are commercially driven or whether they are motivated more through like a kind of existential, like self-actualization need for like, you know, validation for their success, whether they are all about their people or they're all about their profit or both. So you can kind of just through the narrative have a bit more of an understanding of their culture as business owners and their drive, their motivators. But what you really want to understand from that is their sort of willingness and readiness, you know, particularly in a proprietary off-market kind of cold outreach sense. You've got this call, and you don't want to look like you're wanting to rush anything, and you also don't want to look like you're trying to cheat anybody. You really want to have this gradually warming conversation to sort of just tentatively explore whether the timing might be right for them to consider divesting. And you know, if not now, when? Because lots of these processes start with seeds being sown and, you know, roots kind of taking hold over the course of a year and just little regular kind of how's it going kind of check-ins over a period until the seller feels like they've got their ducks in a row ready to you know, maximize the value of their exit by having a proper conversation. So you're only really planting seeds at this stage. Or if you like baiting the hook and throwing your line in the water. And if there's a bite, then it's a question of, well, how strong is that bite? I.e. how ready are they to go? You know, some sellers are just knackered and are looking to pass the baton on. And some are flattered, but are not yet ready to go, but want to, at least the optionality of knowing who to call when they do. So it's working out where on that spectrum the seller really is. Now, what they're probably not going to tell you in the first call is their number, their magic number to go, because you're probably not going to get anything by way of a deal structure out of them on the first call. I mean, you can tease it. You know, what are your ambitions for the business is always a great great question. And, you know, that you can tease from that whether they are like, well, look, I think I've taken it as far as I can, or I'd love for it to grow, you know, 3x, and you know, do you still feel like you've got the appetite to deliver that 3x? Well, no, that's sort of, I probably need to bring in, you know, additional management or spend some additional investment. So you know, you can get a feeling kind of more generally about where they feel the business is at and their relationship with the business. And that's probably about as much as you can glean, but it's a damn good starter. It's a lot better than kind of poking around in the dark over email.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So, you know, we're on the call, we're talking to the seller. How hard should you press for information? You know, what's that kind of balance between asking tough questions and getting what you want from the call and also doing that all important rapport building?
Yeah, I think it's like a coaching contract to some extent, like, you know, as long as you're asking for permission, so along the lines of, tell me if this is an overreach, or I completely appreciate we might be too early to have this particular conversation, or let me know if I'm overstepping. Like you can be very British about it and sort of excuse yourself. But you know, it prepares them for the fact that actually it's okay to say, not yet, mate. But there's, you know, God loves a trier, and there's no reason why you can't sort of say, look, I don't know if this is too early, but I'd love to know, you know, what your 5-year plan is for the business, or do you see yourself with the business in the next sort of 3 years' time? So you can, I think nothing is off limits, but they'll soon, as long as you give them the permission to tell you that it's off limits, then no one's going to feel like they've let the other side of the call down, or you know, have have done something that they shouldn't have done. Yeah. So each call is different and unique. I don't think there's any harm in working up to asking the sort of information that you want, but I think some of the sensitive stuff around what's your magic number and what kind of deal structure do you see? I mean, that the first call is too early, really, to be getting into that sort of detail. You've got to build rapport and trust on both sides before that can really even be a meaningful answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've not been through this particular process, but I did sales for quite a long time, and it's a similar thing there. I have always found in any of these sort of, you know, sales or marketing or any of these sort of conversations that people do quite appreciate you being direct. If you have got a question to ask, they do like asking it. But I do love your, you know, give them permission to say no. It is a very British thing to do, but I can see that working really well.
Oh, great. Well, yeah, I mean, it's worked for me in the past, and I think it's just polite, really, to sort of, set those that envelope, if you like, of and that's a mutual thing to set that envelope, you know.
Yeah. Don't have to go in all Gordon Gekko, guns blazing. okay, so now we're in the seat of the seller. What do they want to hear from you? Because, you know, this is your opportunity to demonstrate some credibility, especially if you're a first-time acquirer. There may be other people that have approached them. You know, what are they looking for in that conversation? What do they want from you as the buyer?
Great question. Well, they want to know that you're a good human and that they can trust you. I mean, everybody really needs to know that this person isn't going to have them over. Mm-hmm. But also, they from a credibility perspective, they want to know that you understand what you're getting into, what potentially getting into, that you might be a good steward for their business. A lot of these sellers are driven by legacy and care and concern for their staff. You know, post their own tenure, they want to make sure that the business is going to be, you know, in good hands. No one wants their reputation or legacy destroyed. So, you know, that trepidation will be quite paramount, I guess, quite apparent in the seller's hesitancy. They're going to want to know that the person on the other side of the call has some knowledge of the space, has actually taken some time to research their business and the market that they serve, has looked at maybe some comparators. I personally have had conversations with sellers where they have deliberately asked questions to ascertain whether I have even bothered to look at, you know, other transactions that have happened amongst their competitors.
That's
or whether I really understand the market. So it's important not just to do a complete kind of scattergun approach to every single market, and then on the back of the fact that you might get, you know, some interest from somebody in a market that you don't necessarily know, jump straight on the call. You think it's probably, it probably behooves you well to take some time just to research the industry before you, you know, try and have a sensible call with these people, or say, look, you know, I'm not an expert in your industry. So, you know, this is super early, but I'm just interested in what you've achieved and the space you serve. I fully intend to bring a subject matter expert with me that is an industry specialist, and take my time learning about this before I try to get involved. You know, you can be authentic about that if you're in a hurry to have a conversation with a seller in an industry that you don't really understand.
Yeah, I think that's wise, because a lot of people are sector agnostic and they're maybe not going into something that they have a direct experience in. So I think that's a nice way to approach that. And you give the seller a chance to, you know, wax lyrical about what they do. You know, are there any deals that you've heard of? Is there anywhere that you think I should start? What do you think I need to know about your industry that I don't already know? And give them a chance to do some talking. And more often than not, I think they'd be happy to do that.
Oh, great. Absolutely right. As you rightly say, you can learn a lot from sellers when you ask them questions and ask them to expand into that space that, you know, is left by the question. Fully agree. Great tactic.
Okay, so I'm on my first call. I'm talking to the seller. We're starting to build some rapport. What are the sort of green, amber, and red flags I'm listening for? So what are the, you know, triggers, warning signs that might dictate whether this might progress towards a deal? Things that they say that might, you know, potentially flag a sort of warning sign in your head. You know, what's your sort of red, amber, green for that call?
I was going to differ on the basis of each type of company and each market that company serves. But And remember that this is everything that you're hearing on this call is sort of veiled. You've got to try and calibrate to how authentic this conversation is really, because you know you're not probably having a no holds barred, fully transparent, open book conversation. You're still doing that dance of the seven veils, that you know, getting to know you thing. So, is the seller going to betray themselves? Unlikely. But if they're starting to mention things like, oh yeah, you know, we had a pretty bad year last year, and you know, I've fallen out of love with the business because of it, then obviously that's probably an amber flag that you, on the one hand, might be an opportunity for you if it was an aberration of a year. But if that is sort of speaking to a trend, and you've looked at like the balance sheet over the sort of the prior years, and you think, yeah, this is in a sort of state of decline, then that might just confirm for you sort of your suspicions that the business is on the wane. So can it actually be restored to its former glory? You know, even if you do bring new blood into the business and new capital into the business, is it able to be saved in that sense? Green flags are probably what I'm listening more for, and not to get emotionally attached to any transaction, it's off until it's on, but I would be listening more for green flags, like, you know, do they speak enthusiastically about their team? Do they speak about delegation? You know, you can ask them some really great questions about how do you interact with your team, and, you know, how much are you still involved in the business day to day, and how do your management meetings generally go? You know, do you convene them frequently? Who leads them? You can kind of open the door for them to talk about their team. And if that is sort of like, oh, no, I still have to do a lot of this myself, or I haven't really got anybody there that I can, you know, that I can trust to go away for a couple of weeks and it's all going to be in safe hands. Like then, you know, the business isn't yet fully detached from the owner in their day to day operation. And so you have to start thinking from a deal structure perspective, like, well, I've got to retain this person, rollover equity or whatever, because, you know, if they're out the door, you know, as soon as the ink is dry on the SPA, there's a great risk, concentration risk on this business failing. So, you know, it's these sort of things that you're listening to in terms of whether the seller has taken the necessary steps to delegate and trust, and whether they have the right people in the team that they can do that with.
Okay. And are there any green flags that you'd listen for that indicate that a seller would be perhaps more ready to go for a deal? I mean, one of your answers earlier, you were saying that, you know, some sellers will come ready with a, you know, their deal room and, you know, all of their data somewhere and access to their finances. And, you know, maybe they've had an offer before. You know, is there anything like that?
Well, that makes you exactly that. I actually really enjoy it when they say, well, we were in a process with such and such, and, you know, we had to walk away because, you know, either the buyer retraded on them, which happens so frequently, you know, they changed the deal to the detriment of the seller. And so, you know, the fact that they may be a little wounded from that time suck that they went through previously, but still open-minded and semi-prepared enough to get stuck in and do it again. Like, you could take the white knight approach there, couldn't you? That, you know, you're kind of riding to the rescue a little. So yes, having been in a process before and having had it not complete, and I'd want to drill down as to whether that was the buyer not being able to come up with the money or wanting to change the terms significantly, rather than, well, they discovered in due diligence that, you know, the EBITDA was a quarter of what they thought it was, or something like that. You know, again, are you going to really find that out on the first call? I think you're really making notes at this point as to what you delve deeper into. So, you know, you might hear from the seller that they were in a process and they no longer are, but it might be a little too early to probe that or to poke at that wound a bit.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so we're coming to the end of our call now. How do we, you know, what's the best way to wrap up that call? How do we set some clear next steps, action items? I know it will depend on how the call goes and, you know, how the seller feels, but, you know, how would you do that? What's the next step for you at the end of that call?
I would want to create the conditions for candor, whereby the seller feels like they are willing and able to share more information in a trusted environment or in a safe and protected environment. So NDA is normally the next step, a mutual NDA that can allow both sides to talk a bit more candidly. It doesn't have to be an outline offer at this stage. It can be, well, you know, do you want to send me your management accounts? If you're interested in exploring an option, I can give you a kind of an indicative valuation, unless you want to tell me what you feel your valuation might be for the business, or what valuation you were at when you were in this process previously. But, you know, again, that's probably kicking the tires and asking permission to ask that kind of a question. But yeah, an NDA is a useful next step. Okay, great. Well, it sounds like we might have something we can explore a bit here. And if the time is right for you, then maybe, you know, let's get an NDA out there and we can start to trade some information, so that we can give you a bit of a picture as to what this deal might look like if it's to proceed, and express our interest. Because at this point, you've not sent an EOT, an EOI, sorry. You've not sent any heads of terms. This is purely speculative at this point. So you need to see a little bit more of something in order to validate, you know, your research.
I love the setting the conditions for candor. I think that's a really nice way to put that. Yeah, an NDA sounds like a good next step. It makes everybody feel comfortable. Like you said, expresses your interest. It's interesting for me. I would have thought that next step would be kind of an in-person thing, but would you go to that NDA and maybe do a little bit more digging, I suppose, before you spend your time going and seeing them in person?
Yeah, I mean, remember that seeing them in person in their workplace can get the heckles up. You know, you hear of all these stories about who you have to pretend to be when you go to visit the seller. You know, oh, it's someone from the bank, or it's the landlord, or it's the man from the council, or whatever. You know, it's the seller is going to want to keep this under wraps, really, from all but their most senior staff and other shareholders. I think if you can get more done at a distance before you create that disruption, or meet offsite, that's the other option. Go meet somewhere neutral ground. I still think having, if there is mutual interest in exploring this further, I think going and having that conversation, mindful that there's an NDA in place already, means that both sides can be a bit more candid. You know, there's still going to be that same hesitation if they could be revealing all this information to you and you've got no legal obligation to respect it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about the reaction of the staff when you go. Maybe that'll be a podcast topic for another time. How to masquerade as the man from the council. Okay, interesting. So I think that pretty much wraps up that first call. As someone that's done this a few times, do you have any sort of memorable successes or horror stories with qualifying calls?
I had one guy happily take my call from my outreach just to tell me to F off. So that was nice. And asked me how I had the audacity to think that I could acquire his business. So that was interesting. But then I've had far more, infinitely more pleasant conversations with people that, and, you know, it's quite interesting that there's been a sort of smorgasbord. I've had some really prepared sellers that have actually exited previously from another business and know exactly the steps that they want to follow and need to follow to sort of execute this process to their best advantage. And they're like running the call. It's actually, you know, it's like melodical music, you know. It's like, wow, we're really moving at pace here. And they really want to know, you know, multiple. Have you done your homework? Have you looked at comparators? You know the average price that people pay as a multiple of EBITDA in this space, in this sector?
Less of a dance with those sorts of sellers then, I guess.
I mean, straight to the point. Yeah, and you can tell the ones that have had a lot of these conversations and are like, come on, mate, you know, don't waste my time.
Give me the number.
And that, you know, if you're going into these calls expecting it to be kind of softly getting to know you and you get hit with one of those, it's like, oh, okay, right. Get my game face on, right? So, I wouldn't say that's a horror story. I quite enjoy that. Yeah. There has been one where I've been speaking to the wrong person, entirely the wrong person, and they haven't fessed up to that until about halfway through the call. That's a bit of a shame because you feel like you may have betrayed some confidence and also wasted some time.
So who were they? Someone else at the business?
The yeah, another minority shareholder, basically, in this case, rather than the majority shareholder, who had decided to take the call, had agreed with the person that you'd been speaking to on email to take the call. And of course, you know, I've gone in with, you know, hi, Dave, or whatever his name was, only about 20 minutes later to determine that it's Tom, not Dave. and that Tom really has no say in whether this deal goes forward, but is just gathering facts on behalf of Dave. So you just have to roll with that one, because that's the decision they've made between them to sort of fence the conversation. And I think they learn more from you than you learn from them in that scenario, which is fine. You know, that's good screening. Expect that to be the case. But yeah, I kind of left the call thinking, I wish he'd said he was Tom sooner.
That is,
or maybe it was my assumption. Maybe I kicked myself for making an assumption, making an ass of you and me, as they say.
Have you ever been on a qualifying call and, you know, sort of part of the way through just thought this isn't going to happen?
There's definite ripcord moments. Yeah, definite ripcord moments where you think this business really isn't for me, or this seller and I aren't going to get on, and. You know, or it's a potential hospital pass, like they are deliberately trying to off something that is going to be a problem. So yeah, I mean, you maintain your politeness, but don't exhaust more time than you need to, and maybe don't offer the NDA.
I think it's a good point to remember to not be too emotionally attached to this, because I think that especially for first time acquirers, and I've seen this happen a lot, there's a lot of legwork that goes into getting to that first call. And it's kind of like, you know, I would relate this back to like having my first sales job, and you finally get that person on the phone and there are kind of red flags that say this probably isn't right. But there might be part of you that thinks I've worked so hard to get this call, I might as well push on with it.
It's the sunk cost fallacy. It's the sunk cost fallacy, Alfie, right? You know, people value their time and their effort, and they're emotionally wedded to the potential success. And so it's almost like the Eddie Murphy sketch, you know, from Raw back in the 80s. Oh, I'm old enough to remember. But like, you know, the man's walking through the desert and he's hugely hungry and someone hands him a cracker and he's like, oh, my God, it's the best damn cracker ever. I don't do that justice. But it's that. It's like over attaching to the outcome. And and that is that's a big no-no, right? So you've got to be cold. Without appearing cold to the seller, you've got to be cold in the way you treat this. Like it could fall out of bed at any minute. The deal is off until it's on, and it has to go through a lot of your own personal kind of ratification in order for it to be on, right? Imagine your life depended on it, right? I have seen some sellers that emotionally attached don't.
And as we talked about earlier, you know, if the average success rate is between sort of 57% and 63%, be going prepared with that fact. You know that it's not going to be a one and done. It's not, you're not going to maybe view the first business and have the first conversation and end up buying that company.
Yep. And every single call is training for the next one, right? It's sharpening your instruments, it's honing your skill, perfecting your art. You know, all of this is failure is feedback, if you like. And you're going to take something from that call, which was a learning experience, even if it isn't the one.
As I was once told on my first day at a call center job, every no is a step closer to a yes.
There you are. And that is a huge motivator.
There we go. Yeah. Okay, so let's sign this off with the one thing a first timer should remember. So if this is your first ever business acquisition, you've done the outreach, you've got that seller on the phone, what's the one thing that they need to remember they should take away from this? What's the big tip?
Don't play all of your cards in the first call. If you don't get through the entirety of what you wanted to, that's okay. As long as the call feels organic and natural, and that you feel that you've reached a kind of an accord at a human level with the seller, that's mission accomplished. Okay, you don't have to tick all the boxes or be able to populate all of your spreadsheet from the 60 minutes you might spend on this initial call. The goal is to have another call, right? The goal is for you to feel that this is something you want to look into further, and for the seller to be open to a meeting or a deeper conversation. That's all you're looking to really hope to get out of this. Rule it in, rule it out. And if it's in, move to the next call. the rest of your data points you can garner as you go further along the process. But I guess that's tip number one. And tip number two is don't try and treat every seller the same. Try to calibrate to their psychology. I could probably list five different type psychologies of seller that I've come into contact with, like an experienced seller, a prepared seller, an accidental seller that is sort of like completely unprepared, but is up to the task and, you know, ready, but not, but, you know, ready emotionally, I mean, and the business is probably just about ready, but they've never done it before. And they're probably, you know, the optimum for me on the spectrum. The daunted seller who's panicked by this process. And really, I would say the daunted seller should have some kind of representation. Like you, whilst I'm not an advocate for intermediaries traditionally, I do think they can be very helpful to people that maybe are not familiar with the process or up for learning. They want to kind of pass the baton to somebody else to see them through. And that's normal. I've been on calls where basically it's like, hey, I'm going to need to pass you to my accountant. And then you're like, okay, right. Well, you're going to act for this guy then to a certain point. And that's totally fine. You know, yeah. Business owners are often good at their craft and their industry, not necessarily at the sort of spreadsheet semantics and financial alchemy that we live in. And I guess finally, there's the distressed seller, where it's take this off my hands. I have had my fill. I'm done. And you need to be very much aware of the kind of emotional roller coaster that they've been on and the volatility of that situation for them.
Yeah.
Which may be the lens through which they see certain things. So don't treat everybody the same. There is a whole spectrum of personalities that you'll encounter.
Excellent. I love that. Well, if you are a first-time acquirer, I think even if you've got some experience, I think there's something in that conversation for you. I would certainly feel more confident going into a call after this. So thanks for that, Gareth.
Great. Well, the next one's on you now, Fionn. I'll send you the list, mate.
There you go. I'm ready. Before we go, I think this is a good opportunity for us to remind our listeners one more time about the Serial Acquirers Symposium.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still some day passes available. It's happening on the 18th of June in Marylebone in central London. We've got a huge amount of guest speakers now signed up talking about, actually, one topic is about seller psychology and deal structuring with sellers. And we've got somebody telling us about their first 100 days, having built and acquired have built their search fund and acquired a company, that what they did in their first 100 days post-acquisition. We have a former dragon who's talking to us about AI and Ooh. How AI can be used both in the process of M&A, but also in value creation post-deal.
That's
super exciting. Yeah, exactly. Mm. We've got some lawyers talking to us about the necessary legal considerations, and we've got some lenders talking to us about some emerging innovative ways of structuring the finance of some of these deals, because often they're leveraged. It's a huge program of topics being covered on the day. You can still save 25% on your ticket price. Get it for £245 using the code LAUNCH at serialacquirer.uk.
That's a steal. Excellent. So exciting. I absolutely cannot wait for that.
It's going to be great. Yeah. And it's across two spaces. We've got this, you know, huge auditorium and then this kind of like big glass box with a kind of networking area. And then in that glass box, we're going to be doing discussion panels. We're going to be doing round tables. We're going to be doing live podcasting. Be good. Not to be missed, I would say. It's, we've got to get through. We've got LBS's this month. Back into this month, and then there's a bit of a lull in the UK ETA conference scene until then. So hope you can all join us.
Awesome. I think it's now time for us to head over to our live listeners and ask them for a Q&A. If you're out there and you're listening and you want to know some questions about your qualifying calls and questions to ask, or you've got any feedback for us, now's the time.
Yeah, pop them in the chat, folks, and off we go. And for those of you watching and listening on our pod, we'll see you again next week. Keep on crunching.
See you next week.